listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Here on Reality Check Radio, it's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send me a text at 2057. You can email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. Well, we've got Tony Knight back. We're going to be talking all things crypto. A couple of things to cover. Me? I don't understand it. Maybe I'm like you. We're going to try and figure it out. I should say this. It's not financial advice, man. I wouldn't know what to do in the world today. But what we're trying to do is understand these things. And of course, this Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is a big deal. Everyone's talking about CBIC, all these acronyms. It makes your head hurt. Tony, come and help us. Why can't we just have money? I understand money. I understand it in my wallet. I understand it in the bank, I think. I understand it when I used to write a check. Bit wobbly when it comes to credit cards and how they work, but I've sort of got used to it. Now there's all this worry and this talk, oh, money this, money that, and CBDC, digital currency, Bitcoin. Why can't we just have money?
Great question. Why can't we have a sound money?
Yeah.
You know, there are bigger forces at work here. We're going through a energetic shift. It's often been, you might have heard the term, the fourth industrial revolution, or the fourth turning is another one. Yeah. It's turning. It's a cycle that happens, and it happens in every area of life. We have every 20 years there's, you know, the generational changes, and that's kind of a turning. So this is a fourth turning, which is four lots of 20 years. And every around 80 years, it's been mapped out going right back, actually goes right back to the time of 1776 and the Constitution, the forming of the Constitution of America. And they've mapped out these turnings that happen in politically, socially, and economically. It's actually really, really fascinating.
But why would history be on a set of railway tracks that say in 20 years' time this will happen, another 20 years' time this is going to happen? Why can't we, as new knowledge, how can we be predicting the future when there's technological advance that we can't foresee? Why would it be 20 years and not 15 or 10 or 5 or not at all? Do we know what makes it 20 years? What's special about the 20 years that we have this change?
That's a great question. And I think these systems are what we're going through is a systemic change. In other words, the actual system itself is, yeah, because when you're creating artificial things like money systems and that, they're only really designed to last so long. They have a shelf life. Like money's, or if you look back in history, money has always gone through these evolutions and changes. The reserve currency status normally lasts an average of 80 years, and it's actually revolving a lot around the US dollar. But there's other energetic forces, like even you could say even astrological. And when you're having new generations coming through that are fed a diet of a whole, you know, diet, look at what the kids are being faced with now, a diet of information through the media that is completely different to our generation. So naturally, they're going to grow up with a completely different paradigm of how the world works. And I believe there are, I don't want to get conspiratorial, but there are forces at work that pull a few levers to sort of try so they can keep, you know, in control of these new ways of looking at the world. And there's new viewpoints are coming through. Naturally, the world is going to be shaped differently. So
it's a funny thing, because I came into government after one of the financial crises in 2008. And it was in many ways a mini COVID in this sense, because there was a shake to the financial system. And immediately, all governments around the world decided they had to bail out the banks. And then, of course, it became a big issue about what was the definition of a bank. And I didn't understand at all why we had to bail out the banks. But, of course, once everyone starts bailing out a bank, if you don't bail them out, then they fall, because it just became this stack of cards. And
exactly.
I watched normally sensible people become semi-insane.
Right.
Like Michael Cullen, Bill English, John Key, in the sense that we had to do this and there was no other thing that could be done. And, of course, it was catastrophic, because if you'd borrowed money from a third-tier lender that didn't get the bailout, you just went over.
Yeah.
And what I couldn't believe was the absolute lack of questioning of why we would be doing this.
Exactly. And so there you are getting very close to uncovering the next layer. There's actually they actually know what's sort of happening and what's going on, because we're in a debt-based system.
Yeah.
We're based on debt. I mean, money comes into existence through debt. So if you can just start to imagine over time, that debt's getting so big, it gets to the point where it's untenable. It can't be sustained anymore. So they have to rework the system into another.
Who's the they?
Well, when I say they, I mean, I guess the central bankers, really, yeah. They're the ones who issue the money. They're the ones who create the rules. They create the plumbing for the system. Mm. And eventually, I guess it's after a while, the plumbing just seizes up or it breaks down, because, you know, you just have to look out into the cities and go around the country, anywhere in the world, you know. There are more and more people that are getting really desperate. There's more and more homeless. There's more and more inflation. And these are all effects. These are all symptoms of a much deeper cause of something we're not really taught to ask. we're not really, you know, you don't ask those questions.
So
you know?
we have governments who get elected by spending money and promising to spend more money. They promise to hold taxes down. And so what happens to the difference? They borrow it. Or they print it, because government has the ability just to print money through the Reserve Bank. They can print a $100 bill for a fraction of a cent.
Although they're not actually printing the bills,
of course,
anymore. They're printing digitally. Yeah, but yes, exactly. And so,
but it's the same. The fact that it's done digitally doesn't change the logic. So no. We're running up debt. We're having to devalue the money. And eventually there's a bang. We had a bang, say, in 2008.
Exactly.
Which was never attended to.
Exactly.
It was just, we'll do more borrowing and pay the banks out to keep alive. COVID was a huge bang on the system, because the Reserve Bank was essentially, and I know it's not how they do it these days with digital systems, but the effect is the same. They were printing $750 million a week.
More money than they were printing more money collectively around the world in those 2 or 3 years than they did in the previous 40. And so that has exacerbated the problem. It's like accelerating the car when you get to the cliff. You know, it's not, it's really just, you know, and then they can say, well, that's, you know, the problem was COVID, or the problem is Russia, or the problem is everything but the actual system. the system itself is breaking down from the inside. It's an inside-out job, and that is a systemic change. It's not a superficial change.
So and we have the media during the COVID years reporting, wow, it's amazing. Everyone's sitting at home because they can't go to work. Businesses are shut down up and down the length of the country. But look, the economy's doing well.
Yeah, I know. The metrics that they use, that the economy is doing well, is just so, so false. It's not funny.
So we're sitting there with an average Joe punter. And, this is just another thing to get annoyed about, worried about, frustrated about. Right. And then we have had two events. We had, is it Catherine Fitz?
Yes, Catherine Austin Fitz.
Austin Fitz, come on. I don't understand it. You'll have to explain it to me.
So what she is.
No, just come. I've got two things to explain. And then the second thing I'd like you to explain, I don't know what order we do it in, is there some outage? And all the computers go down.
CrowdStrike.
What is CrowdStrike? Do you know anything about all that?
They're a cybersecurity firm. I don't know too much about it, but I know they are a cybersecurity firm that control basically cyber protection for our computers. They're actually responsible for ensuring that our computers are safe, if you like. And they apparently ran an update that apparently went rogue or some such thing, which from what I've heard on that, is just ridiculous. This is a firm that has got a lot of intrigue around it because they were responsible for a whole lot of, you've probably heard of the Russian hoax. They call it the Russian hoax, but the American politics and CrowdStrike is very connected. The DNC, the Democratic Party, ordered a report which CrowdStrike were involved in on the fact that something to do with Trump, and it's all very highly deep and political and messy. But they constructed a report around the fact that Trump colluded with the Russians.
Oh yes, I remember that. It was all rubbish, right? And CrowdStrike were involved in that.
Yes, very much in the heart.
Well, that was total hoax and a total crook.
Absolutely.
And the media ran it for years.
And then, and it's all connected to Seth, the guy called Seth Rich, who was he was a Democrat. He blew the whistle to Julian Assange. This is how deep it goes about what was happening. And so Seth Rich, he was taken out, basically. So he just mysteriously got shot just after that, and then this is when things got very murky. And I don't know all the ins and outs of that, and I don't think we can go into it. But I know there's something very, very.
But when CrowdStrike goes down, people can't do their financial transactions.
That's right. That's right.
They can't access their money.
That's right. This is how heavily dependent we are on the digital thing.
And here we are.
We'd firm who's controlling it.
We'd never heard of CrowdStrike before. Never heard of it.
No.
And then suddenly, you could be traveling overseas. You could be somewhere in New Zealand trying to get home. Oh, CrowdStrike's down. Can't do it. And you say, beg your pardon.
Payment.
Beg your pardon, I don't know anything about this. No, sorry. And then you'll be stuck in a call center on an endless loop, absolutely trapped in a system that you can't understand or peer into.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a terrifying, this is a scenario out of a movie.
Yeah, it's the fox guarding the hen house. This is what it is. I mean, these people are supposed to be protecting us, and they're actually, this is the problem with centralized
anything.
Private sort of organizations where there's a lot of weird stuff going on behind the scenes that we can't get transparency to. We don't know what's going on. But if you just earlier, you know, the World Economic Forum put out a report. They actually ran a cyber pandemic, they called it. Now, this is where, you know, this is where the actual Klaus Schwab, the actual the co-founder of, I think he was like, goes right back to the beginning, the co-founder, he put out a thing that the cyber pandemic, he said something like, I'm paraphrasing, that the cyber pandemic will make the great COVID look like a children's picnic. And he said that, and you can find it. He's on record saying it. I've heard him say it a few times on clips. And they ran a simulation on this exactly like they did pre-COVID. They ran a simulation. So, which this is what they love to do. And I don't know. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, I'm wondering whether this CrowdStrike thing is like an early warning of a cyber issue. Yeah. So, and this is, I would believe that it would be very advantageous to them to move us into a new system. If everything goes down, oh, the old system is antiquated, it's done. You know, the Russians or the North Koreans have, you know, a cyber attacked us. So now, well, guess what? We have to go. That there goes your money, you know, that money's gone or whatever. We can't work the system anymore, so we need a new one. And, oh, we just so happen to have one. It's based on a CBDC. It's based on this, what they call, what Catherine Austin Fitz referred to as the unified ledger. And this is
so
where.
So tell me what all this is. Take it from a reasonable person, not completely stupid, can't understand this stuff, terrified of it. What's this unified ledger CBDC all about?
Okay, so the unified ledger, what she's referring to is it's called Project M Bridge, the letter M Bridge. And it is a blockchain, but it's nothing like the blockchain that we like to promote. It's a central blockchain can be created to be completely centralized, just like what we have today. It can be completely private, what they call private ledger. The ledger refers to, you know, like an accounting ledger. A blockchain is also known as a ledger. And this is actually a very high level. It's actually not dealing with, it's a CBDC system, but it's not for retail. It's not designed for us. It's for moving money between banks and large financial institutions. And it is being created. The technicians actually created it from China. But it's a cooperative pilot agreement that they're doing with, I think, Singapore, Hong Kong, UAE, and Thailand, and it has been overseen by the Bank of International Settlements, and they're known as the BIS or the BIS. The Bank of International Settlements are basically project managing a Chinese project. I know this is they're supposedly at war with each other, but I tell you what, in the background, they're all sitting around working out this new system together. So a lot of this is all smoke and mirrors, man. It's so smoke and mirrors. But anyway, they are creating a central bank digital currency kind of system between themselves at the very high level. And the Bank of International Settlements is the central bank of the central banks.
Yes.
They are very high level, and they are the ones that give directives to the central banks. And this blockchain ledger, this MBridge, is also through what they call APIs. Or I think we mentioned about APIs last time. They are the bridges that can plug in different systems into each other digitally. They're algorithms that's like can make that, say, that ledger talk to another blockchain or another ledger or another payment system. And this is where it gets really interesting, is the BRICS nations, the BRICS core nations of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa have created a new payment system called BRICS Pay. People can Google it up. It's there. BRICS Pay is a new system that is digitally created on a blockchain using digital money, CBDC, and it will be interoperable with other cryptos. And the BRICS have also announced their own currency called the unit, or just unit. And this is actually going to be backed 40% with gold and 60% with the member currency, the member countries' own currencies. They're going to digitize their currencies and make it into like a CBDC type like money, and which basically means it's, I mean, our money's digital now, but it means they're putting it on a blockchain so that it can easily interoperate with other. The blockchain makes all the currencies around the world very easy to sort of basically be traded amongst themselves. So this is all happening at the very highest level. This is, as I say, this is for the wholesale side of money. When banks do big trading, they often trade a lot in Forex. Forex is like $1 trillion a day market. It's a huge market. A lot of these big institutions are trading the Forex, or they when they do trade agreements, like when one of these countries buys Russian oil or whatever, they will use this money system. They will use this wholesale CBDC. And then this ledger is the light. They are trying to create it so that it will connect with all other ledgers or blockchains around the world into this huge kind of net, a kind of a big centralized digital system. It's like a big giant thing. And then that MBridge, so this unit, I hope I'm trying to make sense here. This unit is what they would use. Like the IMF have a wholesale currency too, called it's the SDR. It's called Special Drawing Rights. And they use that as a, like they when they loan countries money, they often give them the SDR, and that's convertible to US dollars.
They've done a very, very good job of making it impossible for us to understand.
Well, they have exactly.
Because I don't understand any of this, but can I try
I'm trying to unpack it as best.
I know, and you've had to spend hours on it, and here we are sort of like, what the hell? And, of course, it's the same when we had the COVID, right? They make all these words up, and you have this acronym and that acronym, and it all just rolls around in your head. And then just when you figure one thing out, they come up with another thing. But it's essentially this, if I got this right. We understand fiat money and paper money, and we understand it being created through the bond market, government debt, all good. Along comes blockchain and cryptocurrencies, which are privately run, nothing to do with government. And everyone says, or a lot of people say, this is pretty cool, because I actually have a currency or money that could be potentially stable, because you can't just go and make it out of thin air. You actually have to mine it digitally on computers, and the cost of that is very high and equals the value of the unit. So I've got this currency that can't be toyed with, ostensibly, by governments, and is outside government control and government oversight. So it becomes attractive. Government can't stand the competition, can't stand this thing taking up and potentially undermining it. So governments around the world have developed their own blockchain currency. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're by and large, yes, absolutely correct.
And that the CBDC is stands for a central bank digital currency, which is just a central bank creating its own blockchain system.
Yes.
Or having a blockchain system.
That's exactly right. This is why they bash crypto, so that we get more of us using the CBDC rather than
yes.
They can't have us using all our own money.
So what we have now going around is private crypto and state and across states, they're creating their own crypto. And they're trying to create a value in that. Yeah. And so I'm getting, am I on the right track?
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
And the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, is that that? And Spain?
South Africa.
South Africa.
Now they're the core group. There are a few other countries okay. that have joined now.
They've wanted, presumably, to unhook from the US dollar as the unit of international trade.
Yes.
They've seen an opportunity with a staggering United States of America and this new crypto technology. So they have developed amongst themselves an agreed blockchain currency, correct?
Yes, they're working on it right now. Yes.
And they call that the unit.
They've got a wholesale currency. So there's a difference between they've created their own wholesale currency for global trade between yes. the BRICS nations and the West, which is 40% backed by gold and 60% by those original core currencies. They've also created a payment system that will which will use that unit as well as their own CBDCs and other what they call stable coin, which we will come to, as the stable coins are very important because
okay.
they could be a proxy CBDC. They might okay. drop the acronym CBDC because there's a lot of pushback on that, and they might go and just use a stable coin, which is
just keep it there. Here we are. I'm trying to struggling along. I hope listeners are ahead of me.
What they're doing is, yeah, they're digitizing the current fiat currency.
Yes,
putting it on the blockchain. Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it's
and the inherent worry that we have about this well, I take the kids up skiing. And when you go up to the ski field, no cash, won't touch it. So everything is credit card or one of the ski field cards. And you can see it, right? Makes sense, easy, no dollars floating around and all the rest of it, right? But this could become entirely how the world is run, including New Zealand.
Yep.
So you could imagine no cash in New Zealand.
I believe it's inevitable eventually. It's just a matter of how long.
And the government says, well, look, this is easy enough because everyone's just using their cards. They go and buy an ice cream. They use their credit card or their phone. They use their phone. They just buy their ice cream. No one's got dollar notes or coins in their pocket. They just pull out their phone or their credit card and just pay for everything through FPOS. So look, we've got this outmoded system of paying for things. So let's just make it all digital. Is that what you're thinking happens?
Yes. Yes, they're gonna sell it to us as fast, efficient, it's real, what they call real-time settlement. Settlement means that you're basically sending the payment and it's getting paid at the other end instantly, which we don't have now. It means that there will be all sorts of, you're already starting to see the marketing around it is about how convenient. So they always sell it on convenience.
And good for poor people. I bet they do this. Good for poor people, good for Maori, because they struggle to have bank accounts and they'll just have their little card and will put their benefit payment on their card and then they'll be away.
Yeah.
But so at that point, the state knows every transaction you personally do.
Not necessarily. If you're going on there, I mean, this is where, again, there's a lot of intrigue. There's a lot of unknowns. I don't think we should get too ahead of ourselves because I know that that is an agenda. But if we see that as they're going to, know everything about us, then we're kind of like already on the back foot. And so I don't want to foster that because I believe we have opportunities to create things that are very much more private than even what we've got now.
Yes, actually, what is the worry?
There's a clash of, this is where it's like two systems coming in. This is where, so what I'm presenting is at the very top level, like if you imagine where does an avalanche start? It starts at the top of the hill. When that snowball starts rolling down the mountain, it gets bigger and bigger. And it's what I'm trying to present is at the very top, they are working out a whole new system. And that is going to be connected. And eventually that Enbridge then gets connected into, I did talk about last time, the ISO 222. That's a new... As another ledger that is going, series of ledgers that are going to bring money to us so where we can pay. So just think of as it's like a train carriage and you've got the head, you've got the main engine is being driven by this Enbridge ledger, this unified ledger and the bricks. And then and the other carriages further down, they cut the money goes through a few series of carriages till it gets to us. And so they are working the whole new system at the top and it's going to come all the way down to us. But this is opening up the opportunity.
Why is that a problem?
Well, that could be a problem because basically they are guarding the gatekeepers then that we may well have to go through parts of that system in order to be able to say, like, if people are selling a house or people have made some money on something, we may have to, what they're trying to do is be gatekeepers and they're going to try and guard the gates. And then we're going, where have you made this money? If you want to actually, sort of, cash.
Well, I thought that was obvious, but when I said to you that they'll know what you're up to with your transactions, you pushed back on that.
Yeah, because we are going to have decentralized, more private options that are going
we'll come to the options. I'm just discussing their system.
Okay.
If you have their system.
When it comes purely to their system, yeah, that's what they want. They want us all where there will be no privacy at all. Ultimately, they want us to be tracked and traced, and with this real-time settlement, it gives them the ability to cut our money off in real time. That is the worst case scenario, is that we are literally tracked and traced where we go, where we shop, where we and it means that, you know, they can monitor us with AI and with the digital ID. They need the digital ID as well. They've got a lot of work to do to get there. I mean, they've got a hell of a lot of work to do because not every country is in agreement of this. It's going to be a global system. Every country needs to be on board.
So just think of the government system, first of all, not the alternatives. So in the government system, you're dealing with a digital currency, and in one sense, it feels no different to going up to the ski field and there's no cash. You either wave your phone or you wave your card, and it gets deducted out of your bank, your ledger, if you like. Mm. And you think, oh, well, that's what it is, tap, 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 tap. And you think it is a bit easier, it's a bit cleaner, there's no dirty money and people trying to add the sums up and all the rest of it. So in a sense, that's how it looks. But behind that is the government with very, these days, as you say, artificial intelligence leaping ahead. There's a system that is tracking you 24/7.
Yeah.
Everything you buy and where you are is known.
That's actually happening now. It's just they can't intervene.
No.
In real time, but they are actually, they have got a dossier on, I believe. Everyone's got a digital footprint, and they've got access to that. They can't enforce it, though. They can't they can't do anything with it until they get the digital ID and the AI operational.
Yeah, so then you say, okay, we need to tax people. Well, there's no dodging the tax because every transaction's visible to them and the amount. So they can clip the ticket as you make your purchase.
Yeah, like that's what they plan to do, is actually literally tax you at source.
Yeah. So every transaction, easy consumption tax, bang, 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 can't even dodge it. Next thing they do is they can adjust the tax. So they could be having a system that says, oh, you've had a bit too much fizzy drink this week.
Yeah.
And start taxing fizzy drink harder on you. So your first bottle of fizzy drink pays a little bit of tax, and then your next bottle of fizzy drink pays more tax. All of that is possible.
It's all possible, yes.
They could get to the point where they say you've had too much fizzy drink and you're coming out of the checkout and a checkout whistle goes, take the fizzy drink out because you can't take the fizzy drink. Take the fizzy drink out because you've had enough this week. You could be a dissenter of a government policy, and they could utterly immobilize you.
Yes, and like what you said before, this, they can't do it alone. They have to have private companies. It's a public-private partnership situation. And I've watched a lot of videos about this topic and what the developers are saying about the CBDC, and the ones that are actually creating the infrastructure for them to actually operate. And it's interesting because you get a completely different narrative from some of these people, where they vow that privacy is actually at the core of it, and there won't be this. So there is actually, what you get from media or what you get from social media or what you get from governments and three-letter agencies like the WEF, they talk tough about how we are, you know, they're on record. A lot of them are on record saying, even the Augustin Carstens, who heads up the BIS, has said, we want to be able to track everybody. They've come out, they've actually said it. I've seen lots of, but when you talk to some of these private companies who are building the actual infrastructure, they've got a completely different narrative, which I find very interesting. I like to go to source. I don't want to just listen.
I don't understand what you just said.
So what I'm saying is that if governments around the world are working with private companies to build the blockchain to enable this CBDC system to come in, a lot of the builders of it, a lot of the companies that actually have the contracts to create this system are saying that privacy, we are building real privacy into this so that people can't track and trace. This is what some of them are saying from the people that are actually at the coalface building this stuff, building their digital infrastructure. So what I'm saying is there's even a conflicting information.
Yeah, well, my observation of government from the inside is that they will always, always, forever have a in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what they're working on.
I mean, we actually have it with Xero. Government will get your Xero records, and my best mates had this direct experience. Xero handed all the records over to the government agency just on an email.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
Xero will swear black and blue that they won't do that, but they do. And, of course, they're required by law. I was there when the legislation was set up for Xero and the other companies. I can't remember the Australian-based one, because they had a problem. Because your accountant was always required under their tax law to have the tax records available. And they had to be held within New Zealand's jurisdiction.
Mm.
When Xero set up, it's not held in New Zealand. And for a long time, they were operating in a legal grey area at best. But then they agreed with the tax commissioner, and this is written in the legislation because I was there when it went through, that the IRD could access the records.
Oh, yeah, they've got incredible powers. This is the overreach that's going on.
So already, and I mean, not only that, they can see the changes that are made. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibilities that with AI or sophisticated algorithms, Xero transactions are being alerted directly to the IRD.
Hmm.
And, of course, the IRD, when it was going around explaining tax changes, would be promoting Xero to get you on a platform that they can readily access without actually having to bother to go to an accountant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dodgy, eh?
Xero will tell you it never happens, but I know it does. And I've got, you know, Rod Jury admitting it does.
Yeah.
So I know exactly, it doesn't matter to me what those private companies like Xero are promising. I know that governments won't let them operate unless they have access, unless they have control. And they'll say something like, we'll only control this if it's like something really, 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 really bad, like terrorism. But of course, someone who's questioning the vaccine becomes a terrorist.
Yes, I know. It's so crazy, isn't it?
So this is scary, scary stuff, which we're uncovering here.
We're getting to the heart of the belly of the beast now.
Can you I'm sorry I'm so slow. So Catherine Austin Fitz, this is what prompted you to come on. What is she saying that sparked your interest?
Well, she's saying much like what you're saying in many ways, that this unified ledger that's coming in, this global kind of, it's like a dragnet that is going to basically come right and rode right into our lives and basically the CBDC will be riding on the back of it, or something similar. As I say, it may not have that acronym. They're calling it, see, I see the Reserve Bank here, call it digital cash to try and make it sound all wonderful. But whatever it is, there is definitely something coming that's centrally controlled money. There's no doubt that.
And your point of all of this is that there is an alternative, right? And it's an alternative that completely unhooks you from government.
Yeah, or maybe not, you know, ultimately completely unhooked, but maybe not. And I don't know how, and there's so many moving parts of this. There are so many different irons in the fire here. There's so many different, because there's so many different projects that, but a lot of the projects are working in a similar way where it's what known as, you know, we know it as DeFi. DeFi is short for decentralized finance. That's at the heart of it. There's a decentralized finance arena that has been very, very developed, and it is running alongside the centralized finance aspect. But decentralized finance has been largely funded and created by private enterprises who want nothing to do with this government system. I know that for a fact. There are a lot of people from rich people, investor people, hedge funds, big companies, CEOs, right down to the developers who have enlisted some of these technicians to build this decentralized finance kind of arena where we can play with real privacy, where money can be made directly by people without having to go through a third party, without having to go through a middleman, peer-to-peer type economy, where people can lend and borrow within this decentralized arena, where these blockchains can mint their own money that are backed by real assets and real activity, real utility, use case. Mm. And so this is happening as fast as what's happening at the centralized. It's like two systems sort of running parallel, and they're not really meeting at the moment. They kind of separate.
Well, you don't want them to meet, do you?
Well, ultimately.
Because basically the goals are incompatible. One goal wants to know what you're up to and control you, and the other one is no one can know anything.
Well, the thing is, though, you can actually have privacy. It can interact with it, but you can have privacy without having to show your hand and who you are and all your personal information. You can actually interact because it's like plumbing. It's like if you imagine you're hooking up the plumbing of the house, you know, the people in the lounge, you know, might be, you know, living in, you know, different room to the bedroom, but the water still runs. So there will be pipelines of money flowing into the decentralized area, which doesn't affect your privacy in any way. It's the question is when you say you want to, you know, see, if it becomes a self-contained ecosystem, if it's end-to-end decentralized, then we never need to even use, it's like you don't have to use that centralized system. We could still get everything you want within there, because there are going to be a lot of avenues, loopholes, if you like. There are going to be dozens of loopholes because this development is happening all over the place. It's like going to be like whack-a-mole. So it's going to be like all these different developments on the blockchain meeting up. They're all linking up. They're all interoperating with each other in a decentralized way. So, but we don't know how it's going to play out. But I like to stay optimistic while being a realist as well. I see the dangers and threats, but I in my world, I've seen too much in the development on the positive side to be, you know, I'm not going to throw the towel in, that's for sure. And
if you're looking at this with your following it, it must consume you as the gravest thing confronting mankind.
This is up there. This is right up there because,
But it's crazy, right? Because
it is crazy.
Someone like me is completely oblivious to it, and they're throwing around a bit of acronyms and say, oh, well, I guess I should be scared. But this, to me, is this number one, and this is number one, and this is number one. Because there are so many threats being thrown at us
from every side. And like the financial system really is the hub of the whole entire world system.
It is
the head of the octopus that controls all the arms or tentacles. And this is why it is a big deal, because it is a systemic
thing. It's a huge deal.
I
agree with you 100%. It's a huge deal.
And a lot of people, because they don't understand money or they understand the system and how it works, we tend to be working with very limited, information, and we don't really know what's going on in the very, halls of power.
But, and, of course, our difficulty now is we have become awake to – it's not just what is happening, or almost doesn't matter, what is happening within our parliament and within our government, because there are international organizations determining all of this, and our parliament and our government will nod along.
Yeah, that's right. They basically have no choice to go along. Like what you were saying before about, you know, John Key and all that. There was no question about what they were doing. They were doing it because they were all in agreement. They're all in collusion. They're all talking to each other. There's absolutely, you know, this is like you either play along with our system or you're out of the system.
That's right.
That's your choice. Yeah.
Absolutely right. And one of the things that I'm just reflecting on all of this and from my limited experience, and one of the things I observed is everything to do with government, every opportunity is taken to enrich government. So every policy change that is made strengthens government's grip on the citizen, strengthens government's grip over the use of resources, strengthens government's control. And even when you're liberating things and you're a politician who's against government and freeing it up, even while you're doing that, the government agents are tightening their grip. A classic example would be Tomorrow's Schools, which was all designed to send power down to schools and unhook them. And the ministry went along with this, but then just put in place all the rules and regulations which grab the power back. So you become like, oh, yes, you're the board making decisions, but You're under our thumb. And it's wonderful because then they have a sense that you're free, but they're in control. I hope I'm making sense here. And the interesting thing is it's not some great force. In my observation, what I saw of it, it was just like little bureaucrats who work in government, think government is good, think things can go wrong, and thinks that everything needs an oversight of government, everything, because otherwise it might go wrong. You know, you can't cross that little bridge on your tramping trip without it having been checked because something might have gone wrong. You can't put that ladder up on that roof without actually filling out our form because something could go wrong. And all the way through, it's all about, you know, we've got to just watch out for the bad guys. We've got to watch out for the cowboys. Won't affect you, Tony. Won't affect you because you're doing a good job. But just, you know there are cowboys. Oh, yeah, no, I know there are cowboys out there. We'll fix them. And all the way through, the power of the state multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. And anything that comes along that threatens it, they have this wonderful way of taking it over. And what you've highlighted for me this morning is that they're taking over blockchain.
That they're taking over the internet.
Yes. Internet. That's the other example, right? Yes. Because when the internet came along, oh, glory be, we're now free. We can now talk. We can now. Nope.
But, you know, there's a law of the universe for every action is an equal and opposite reaction.
Yes.
And this is our way out. This is the balancing factor. They are not operating in a vacuum. And like you said, a lot of people are waking up. And they say in investing, past performance is not indicative of future return. Yes. But you can apply that same rule to government. The government overreach gets to a certain point, and if you look back in history, lots of governments and countries have got to a certain point of power, and then they rush for the ultimate power, and then they collapse. We are at that. But what happens when the government, if they lose control of the money, which is a danger for them, and this transition is very, very tricky for them, if they lose control of the narrative and of the money system, then they're done. The only reason it's arbitrary power. They give themselves power through these legal systems, and they make, but it doesn't last forever.
No, and this is why the internet was such a challenge for them.
Absolutely, it woke a lot of people up to information,
and then they got control of your Facebooks, your Googles, and all the rest of it. And now there's this existential fight.
Yeah. Now look what that you bring in a really good point. If I just saying with what's just happened the other week with Trump,
yes,
the internet was very much our friend there.
Yes,
because normally they cover up everything. The internet, the reporting
was fantastic. People
got out. They lost control of that narrative.
They lost control. And there was one man that made that possible. And we still got a question mark over him, but that was X did that.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, because if we hadn't have had X, we wouldn't have seen it.
That's right. That's right. So things that's are changing.
Yeah, but how crazy is it that there's actually, it's a great example, isn't it, that the attempted assassination, we got to see it and hear firsthand experience and hear experts unhooked from the narrative explaining it, all because of X.
Yeah, because of X and because of other digital warriors and keyboard warriors and some of the people who were videoing the situation. Yeah.
But you couldn't have done it with Facebook or Google.
No way. No way. And in fact, Elon Musk has been sued by the, he's been sued by the European government
Yes.
for his unwillingness to acquiesce to their.
Rules.
So people, I know people paint him as the, oh, well, he's working both sides of that. But what he is doing there is incredibly positive and powerful for us. Well, no matter what he's doing, he will just go. If he feels the public tide is turning, he will just jump on the train that's winning, I reckon. And he sees that public opinion, the court of public opinion, is getting loud and strong now. And this is going to translate to other areas, including our money system, including this is why it's such a huge change what we're going through, because
It's monumental.
it
No,
is
I can see that now.
societal change on
I
every.
had some time with Paul Brennan yesterday, which was so lovely. And
There's
the
a
thing we ended up discussing was they don't even pretend that they're not lying now.
No, they don't.
Like that, my point to Paul was
Arrogance.
that FBI director, she had a prepared statement that said they couldn't go on the roof because it was too slopey. Well, that wasn't a throwaway line. Now, no one is that stupid,
No.
right? But the amazing thing is she expected to get away with it.
I know. Well, she's gone now, isn't she? She's.
Well, yeah, but the problem remains. You've got to wonder, this is just to conclude, whether Trump, who seems to be this extraordinary force of nature, so affected by what they've done to him, because the system doesn't want him, does it?
No, the system doesn't want him at all. He is a thorn in their side.
Right back to the
What people
Russian
say about,
hoax.
yeah, that's right. The Russian collusion hoax, the fabricated evidence in Mar-a-Lago with the,
They don't want him.
they do
So,
not want him.
to the point where they will goad unhinged people to assassinate him by constantly calling him Hitler and the end of America. And not only did they goad people because they describe him in such cataclysmic terms, they have Keystone Cop level security around them. And he's still standing. And I'm sort of looking at this guy. I'm looking at the people he has around him, and you think, whoa, he's only got another 4 years, not got another term. Maybe we'll actually see the whole thing opened up.
It's going to be fascinating. They're like
Imagine,
best ever.
if he released the JFK files or something, and in there was that the CIA shot him. I mean, what the
It's.
hell? Or some Twin Towers. Oh yeah, it was us. I mean,
Yeah. It only takes one disclosure
one
at
thing.
that level, and then basically it's all on for young and old.
Wow, we are living the Chinese proverb of interesting times, and that money. Tony, I'm sorry that I was obtuse, but I think we got there.
Oh, that's
I
okay.
think I can understand the CBD thing now, and I can understand that it's government taking over it. So I thank you for that. I've been talking. By the way, what's your web page, Tony?
It's DeFi, freedom.nz.
Okay, and you can learn more. And we should say that, heaven forbid, this isn't any financial advice or financial advisors or anything like that. We're just trying to understand this debate, this discussion, and what is going on. And we thank Tony. We thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate that you're willing to, you know, hear me.
Oh, wow. Now I'm actually thinking this is a big deal. Send us a text, 2057, email us, inbox@radleycheck.radio. So much coming at us. It's like not a train coming down the track straight towards us. It's like we're in the junction, multiple trains coming. Oh, well, but here we are. We're still a community. We're still talking. We're still learning. And we're going to beat them because we're together.
That's it.
Thank you, Tony.
United we stand.
Yes.
That's the one.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.